No matter if points are gained or points are lost, there will be much to discuss. For analysis regarding tonight's Winnipeg Jets game, here are Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve post-game show starts now.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve post-game show. Sometimes it's nice to go where everyone knows your name and everyone knows the name of Dave Manouk on the right of the screen. And I'm your host, Drew Mandel, here to talk about tonight's Winnipeg Jets defeat at the hands of the juggernaut Boston Bruins, the Jets with the early 2-0 lead. But as legendary baseball manager Frank Robinson once said, close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. The Boston Bruins staging a furious comeback and take the victory in regulation time by a 3-2 margin. Dave M., good to see you on this Thursday evening. Both of us playing a little bit under the weather, but we'll power through for the good folks who join us here each and every time we do a post-game show after a Jets game. This one was a battle. It was billed as a sort of a battle of two of the top teams in their respective conference. The Bruins, who of course have just been absolutely unbelievable this season, as they have been for so many years in a row. And the Jets, who are sort of the upstart team that have surprised so many people this year. And the Jets got off to a good start, but weren't able to maintain it through the entirety of the 60 minutes of tonight's contest.
Yeah, I mean, look, you don't become 17-0-2 at home, now 18-0-2 at home, by accident. That's not a mirage. That's not a team that – I would say it's a little unusual that they've played so many more games at home than they have on the road, and their road winning percentage is around 66%, and their home winning percentage is about 91%, I think. And of course, obviously, they have two regulation overtime losses or shootout loss. I don't know which ones they are, but the reality is, like, it's their numbers are insane. They really are. And what Boston has been able to do is build themselves. I mean, first of all, Swayman was excellent. I mean, he made some very nice saves on the Jets when he needed to, when the Jets looked like they could really open things up in that first period. And it was a fairly even first, and it was a good effort. And you thought to yourself, okay, well, that's regardless of the score at that point, you're just thinking, well, the Jets can hold their own with Boston. And of course, that's why we always say, as cliche as it is, hockey is a 60 minute game and it requires a 60 minute effort, because things are not decided after 20 or after 40, not necessarily even after 60. But the reality was that the Jets were going up against, quite honestly, the best team in the NHL, and for the first time this season, and Boston was full value. I mean, they've got the best power play in the league. They've got a top five penalty kill in the league. And again, the energy in that building was incredible. I mean, the fans are into it, and you know, look, there's definitely, I think Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press, who must be down there for the free. He said, you know, nothing sucked the energy out when the Jets got the second goal from Jansen Harkins, but at the same time, it was still a great atmosphere in that building. And we know we've been to Boston, Drew, and we know what it's like to Boston sports. It's in the really next level, actually. There's not much like it. I mean, of course, New York sports, similar, but any of those East Coast cities, Philly sports, that's sort of same sort of thing. That same passionate fan base. So, yeah, I mean, look, it was an interesting game from a Jets team that, and you, look, I talked in the chat for most of the game, second, third periods, for a little bit of the first with some of the folks here. And we talked about some of the power plays, opportunities that were given or not given, seemed a little bit interesting. And I thought, especially the worst one by far, if you're going to call anything, was that non-high sticking call against Pierre-Luc Dubois. And look, we're not going to say that the special teams was the difference, but you know, the Bruins did score a special teams goal, right? So, I mean, that is a benefit to them. And they had more, what did they end up with? Four power plays, five power plays in the game. So, I mean, it definitely was a factor to the two that the Jets had, but five. And so I'm not going to sit here and say the Jets were the better team and, you know, blah, 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 because they weren't, but power plays do give your team momentum. And I think that the Bruins were able to generate, even though the Jets PK actually looked pretty good, and Jets PK is a top five PK as well. But it was one of those situations where you're sitting there thinking to yourself, okay, we tend to think of game management from the refs, and they're going to, unless it's egregious, unless it's like a two-hander, you know, unless it's the Taylor Hall kind of cross-check from behind on Ville Heinola, you kind of tend to think that the refs do say, okay, well, here's one, here's one, here's one, here's one. But it didn't seem that way. And you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't really believe in that kind of nonsense. But I just thought that it was a little telling that some of the penalties that were marginal, like the Mark Scheifele penalty, which ultimately got a goal against against the Jets, was a pretty marginal call. And I didn't think it was one. You know, I agreed with Kevin Sorey, what he said on the broadcast. Like, that's the kind of thing that you just let the game go. It's too much. If the ref, really, you put your whistles away. Unless it's that cross check from behind, unless it's a clear Kevin Stanley loose, you have to have control of your stick. He smashes the Bruins guy in the face. That's a high sticking penalty. You know, that those are the pretty clear. But like the Mark Scheifele one, you let it go and look what it does. It changes the sort of composition of that hockey game. And it gives the Bruins some life. And so, unfortunately for the Winnipeg Jets, the special teams was a little bit weighted in one way versus the other. But at the end of the day, you have to be able to, you know, hold your own 5-on-5. And it was the Bruins 5-on-5 who were really controlling the play, especially in the second and third periods.
Yeah, you know, the Bruins are, you know, they are notorious for getting sort of champions calls, let's call them, you know, where they get the benefit of the doubt from the officials. And I don't know if that's a function of just them being at such a high level for so many years, or them just sort of knowing how to work the system to their advantage. I don't think that the officiating was the difference in this game. There was certainly, it had an impact on it, which you never really want officiating to have an impact on. But the final 40 minutes of this game, the Bruins were really taking it consistently to the Winnipeg Jets. And sure, the Bruins have to, whether or not they say so in their post-game media availability, they got a very lucky bounce, which changed the tenor of the game. I mean, getting that bounce on their first goal, and we'll get into it in the Betway game recap here on the Illegal Curve post-game show brought to you by Betway. It changes everything that's going on in the game. Sure, they're coming at the Jets, and sure that they've been sort of controlling the flow of the play after what I would describe as a relatively even, if not even leaning a bit in the Jets' favor, first period. But Connor Hellebuck, to that point in time, has really been standing on his head. There's no guarantee he's going to continue to stand on his head and continue to play lights out and continue to make, you know, breakaway saves on David Pastrnak like he did early in that first period. But, you know, the longer the Bruins go with being snake bit, probably the more confidence Hellebuck gets, the more frustration the Bruins maybe get. Although given a veteran team like the Bruins, I don't think they would have gotten that frustrated. They would have realized they just bide their time. But they get that very fortuitous bounce, and it ends up in the back of the Jets' net. And you could just sort of see that there was almost, if you wanted to take tonight's game and say there's almost two halves to the game, that is where you sort of get the peak, and then everything else is going down the hill from the Winnipeg Jets' perspective, because they just didn't have, I thought, an answer to that lucky break by the Bruins. And they got close at the end of the game, and you know, more often than not, Kyle Connor in that situation,
right?
Don't ask me how he gets that open with 4 seconds to go in the game. How does Kyle Connor get behind your defense when you've pulled the goalie, or when the opposition has pulled the goalie with 4 seconds to go in the game? More often than that, he scores that goal, and then it's maybe 3-3 and it goes to overtime, and it's a whole different conversation we're having tonight on the Illegal Curve post-game show. But You know, as the Bruins are perennial contenders, perennial champions, and you saw it almost in some of their play in the second and the third period tonight. They get the hometown bounce, they get the home cooking when it comes to some of the officials' decisions. You get some just that they just have that aura around them of being a tremendous team. I wouldn't say tremendous franchise, because it's almost like the players succeed in spite of the front office and some of the decision-making and some of the poor drafting. I mean, of course, Kyle Connor being in that position, because Kyle Connor, you know, probably should have been a member of the Bruins if they, I don't know, Lord knows what the hell they were doing on that draft year.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just goes to show you that Patrice Bergeron, David Pastrnak, you know, Brad Marchand, whatever you think of him, You know, Charlie McAvoy, some of those other guys in that Boston.
Jake DeBrusque, who was one of those guys taken in 2015, for the record.
Sure, Jake DeBrusque. I mean, he's been there for long.
Although, imagine for the record, had they taken instead of the other two guys, their names are
Jacobs Borrell and Jake DeBrusque and somebody else.
I mentioned it in the chat today, but it's amazing. The next two players, 17 and 18, Matthew Barzal, Kyle Connor. Can you imagine the Bruins with those three players on the team?
Ooh. It's probably in a slightly better position, but which is hard to believe because they're in such a great position usually. In any event, the Jets aren't able to get that equalizing goal. They're not able to hold the lead. You sort of saw the Jets, again, I thought that they, similar to Sunday in Seattle, they ran out of steam a little bit. And especially with a team like Boston, which is just going to, when they smell blood, they know how to take advantage of it. And the Jets had a decent push in the last few minutes of the third period, and they had that opportunity with the net empty. But you could see, I thought, from the time of the Stanchion goal, it was all Boston from my perspective at that point.
The big debate, Drew, that I was having in the chat, I won't name names, turd, but I mean, I'm not going to name names, but the big debate
that might be too obvious, T-erd.
Yeah, okay, fine, T Ferguson. But anyways, the point I was trying to, what we were chatting about, is whether you would have used a timeout after the first kind of wonky Bruins goal, but not because of the goal, because that's whatever. But right after that, the Bruins had a lot of momentum. They threw a lot at Connor Hellebuyck and the Winnipeg Jets. So do you use your timeout there, or do you hold it in advance? And for the record, don't use it at all for the rest of the game.
So. Well, you know, I mean, the truth is, I think the Jets almost would have preferred a whistle in the last 2 minutes after they pulled Connor Hellebuyck, because it was a little bit of they were having some trouble getting set up in the chaotic zone.
It was terrible.
Yeah, and it's just a function of, I thought the players were gassed, and the Bruins did a great job of sort of stuffing up the neutral zone, and as they just couldn't get a whistle because of the just constant flow to the game, and that's to Boston's advantage. Look, I understand the question. I wouldn't have used the timeout there. I thought that I don't think it's going to help that dramatically. This isn't like you're playing against a team, that sort of relies on momentum. They're the Boston Bruins. They're going to be able to come at you regardless of if you have five timeouts and you take them in a row.
For sure.
That's not a big
Turd's happy there. Turd's happy.
Yeah, I agree with Turd in this one. I mean, I don't think a timeout there is going to do much. Boston's not going to change their philosophy because you take a 60-second timeout. They're the Bruins. They know
especially considering it's only a 30-second timeout.
Well, there you go. Even that's right. I was giving them an extra one at that point.
Were they taking back-to-back timeouts?
Yeah. It just didn't. I don't think that's going to make a difference.
Okay.
The Boston Bruins today, the Jets played a very good first period. And then they learned that this is what, in the second and the third period, this is what a Stanley Cup, perennial Stanley Cup contender looks like. And the Jets are a damn good team in the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the two best teams that the Jets have played this year are the Carolina Hurricanes. I mean, that was on an off game for the Hurricanes, and they still managed to score those three goals and send it to overtime. Carolina and Boston, to me, are the two best teams that the Jets have faced this year. The two teams that, by and large, had the Jets on their heels the most. I know there were some bad games against Western Conference opponents. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I thought the Jets can compete against Vegas. The Jets can obviously compete against the Dallas Stars. They can compete against most of the teams in the Western Conference. The game against Boston and the game against Carolina are the two games where I thought the Jets were just sort of on their heels for the most part and couldn't match their opponents' skill set, speed, things of that nature. And there's other games, but the game against Seattle when they were on their heels last Sunday, but that to me is more rest factor. It's more of a fatigue factor. Boston, Carolina, to me, are two of the best teams that we've seen out of the East and completely.
Yeah, and the only thing I would add is that, and I think, I don't remember who made the comment, but I liked it. It was, I can't give out the tough duck toque for the hardest hitting comment because that's Drew's purview, not mine.
You can do it. If you see something
I'm going to agree that I like the idea of, seeing Boston and the Jets play a big series. Now, of course, worth noting, Boston's healthy, right? The Boston Bruins are a healthy hockey team right now, as far as I know. I don't think that they're missing any of their big guns. The Jets are. Jets are missing some big players. Yeah. And again, we're not here to make excuses for a team that lost the game. Boston was a better team. But I just think that if I'd love to see a healthy Winnipeg Jets club against a healthy Bruins team and then see those two teams duke it out. Because I just think that I'm not suggesting that the Jets would have it would have changed the end result. I just think it would have most likely mitigated some of the unevenness in the second and third periods. I think the Jets might have had a little more push with some of their bigger dogs, a guy like Nikolai Ehlers, Blake Wheeler. Just add a few more of those guys into the lineup, and I think you get a little bit more. But no, I mean, look, it's a good lesson for the Jets to learn. I mean, you have to go up against a team like Boston, and one mistake, one small breakdown, leaving Nick Foligno wide open in front of Connor Hellebuck, that's the difference in the hockey game. Because the Stanchion goal is like whatever. A power play goal, not a big deal. But the 5-on-5 goal in the third period with, 8:40 to go in the third? That, Drew, is where you have to be, you know, let's just to steal a Drewism, attention to detail matters.
Yeah.
And right then and there, I think it was Brendan Dillon and was it Morgan Barron? There were a number of guys who abandoned their post, and Nick Foligno's wide open in front. And it ends up in the back of the net. So
it was Kyle Connor. Connor was
one of the guys too. Yeah,
Connor and Dubois, I think, were the two guilty parties there. You could sort of look at them. I think they were confused as to who got who, and then nobody got Foligno, and it ended up in the back of the net. I mean, look, look at the faceoff percentage in this game. And this is something that I think the Jets
need to get better at that. Drew, just to quickly interject before you get to the raw numbers. I was thinking about it throughout the course of this broadcast and for a while. What the Jets need to do instead of going on holidays, they need to have a clinic. Remember when Paul Maurice brought in, who was it? Was it the ref? And they worked on faceoffs for a couple of practices.
Training camp or something.
And they did just faceoffs. This team needs to work on their faceoffs.
Well, I mean, again, it's hard, when you don't get possession on 2/3 of the faceoffs, because I'm pretty sure it was about 67% winning percentage for the Bruins. And most NHL games, it's not necessarily exactly 50-50, but it's within realm of 50-50, 60-40. 67-33 is one-sided beyond belief, which is why, I mean, not that we're getting ahead of ourselves, but looking towards the trade deadline, if a guy like Ryan O'Reilly would come available, I think that would be a huge addition for the Jets. Because again, it would help up the middle, it would help in the faceoff circle, everything. That's a digression for another day in time. But when you're starting without the puck on 2/3 of all faceoffs, you're swimming upstream. You're starting each shift by swimming upstream a little bit. And that's an area of concern. And I'm sure that it's something that Rick Bowness and the coaching staff are going to try and work on. And it's something the Jets should be better at this point in time. And I know the Bruins have Patrice Bergeron, and Patrice Bergeron is basically the perfect hockey player. I mean, that's what you're talking about, basically, with Patrice Bergeron.
Patrice Bergeron or Brad Marchand? The reason I'm saying that is because there was a graphic showing Bruins who had, I think it was like 100 points or something like that. And it was a picture. I think they were talking about, it was either Patrice Bergeron.
Yeah.
They showed it, but the name bar said Brad Marchand.
I gotcha. But I mean,
having fun at TSN's expense. No big deal.
You do enjoy doing that, I got to say. Look, there's so much to like about the Boston Bruins, and so much that you want to model the way they play. And, Do they get some calls? Yeah, there's no question they get some calls. Do they get the benefit of the doubt? Yeah, there's no question they get the benefit of the doubt, but that's just, the beauty of being the king. If you're the king, or you're close to being the king, you oftentimes get the iffy calls in your favor. And, you saw that at times in tonight's game, but in my books, also full marks to the Bruins for a well-deserved victory. And the Jets can use this as an opportunity to learn and an opportunity to get better. And again, this is a good hockey team. The Jets still are, but if you want to get to the Bruins level, this is what you need to do to get there.
Well, Drew, and that's why the comment I put up was appropriate by Flying and Dukes, because they said if this is a measuring stick game, Jets showed well in some ways and can really learn from it in others. I'm going to add that part, but it's true. I mean, there absolutely is the case. And so I didn't love the end of the game by the Winnipeg Jets when there wasn't that proper urgency. They seemed like just a tired group and they just didn't have their legs. And remember, this is a team that hasn't been practicing much. So
they played seven. I mean, look,
no, this December has been insane. I'm not minimizing it because I'm just saying they haven't had to practice. So they've had that benefit of staying off the ice, but it's still been, I mean, Drew, what is this, the 16th game or something like that? Not really, but you know what I mean? Like there's been a lot of games through 22 days in December.
Look, when after tomorrow night, you know, when the season, when the schedule, you know, finally the pre-Christmas schedule finally comes to an end tomorrow night, it will have been 6 games in 8 days. I mean, that's what it'll be. It'll have been 6 games in 8 days.
And that two on the West Coast, one at home, and then the two in the
East Coast. I mean, that schedule malpractice.
Yeah.
And then they're talking about, and I mean, Ezzy and I talked about this in whatever show it was. I don't remember. That's scheduling malpractice. It's unfair to the athletes. And then they're talking about adding 2 more games to make
it. Oh, I saw that. All I could think about was like, I'm like, no, reduce the games.
Yes.
Reduce the
games.
Adding games is the dumbest thing. Like, I get it. You make more money. It is the stupidest plan. The games are terrible. And you know what I was thinking, Drew? And I don't know what your thoughts are on this. But to me, why do I need to see every single team?
You don't.
Like, you don't. It's kind of, to be honest with you, it's kind of like baseball in the sense that it was kind of a treat to see certain teams infrequently, because then when you actually get to see them,
Look at the NFL. If you're in the NFC North, you see the AFC teams at home once every 8 years.
Right.
Once every 8 years. And nobody goes, you know, there's a way to schedule it where, you know, you can go every second year at home and seeing the Bruins, or every second year you see the Devils at home. I mean, you know, those are the games that, for, you know, by and large, with the exception of, you know, a couple teams with superstar players, you know, that they don't sell that well. So from my perspective, there's a way to, you know, this idea that it has to balance perfectly, that you have to play 4 games against everyone in your division, 3 games against everybody in the other division in your conference, 2 games against the Eastern Conference for a grand total, because it works out perfectly to be 84. They need fewer games, not more games, fewer games. You see the quality of the play sometimes. You 6 games in 8 nights, coast to coast, is unfair to the players. It leaves them more vulnerable to injuries. And this isn't a Winnipeg Jets specific complaint. This is just a comment about athletes in general. 6 games in 8 nights leaves them vulnerable to injury. It reduces the competitive integrity of the game when one team is sitting there twiddling their thumbs because another team has been playing nonstop hockey basically for an entire week. It's just it needs to be reconsidered entirely as to how they come up with the schedule and how they come up with the right number of games. And I understand it's all about money. I'm not stupid. I know that. But it's insulting to everybody else that they're
to pretend
that
like they're... it's like adding more preseason games. Like, God, I really need to see 7 preseason games.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's obviously. Well,
and they're trying to, you know, they'll say, well, as a result of these fewer, if we add 2 more regular season games, we'll only do 4 preseason games, 2 on the road and 2 at home.
That'd be perfect. That'd be, you know, if that was the case, I'd be full marks for that.
Well, they wouldn't do 7 preseason games or whatever the number would be. I would never put anything past
the NHL, Drew. So
true.
Just be careful.
They wouldn't, but you never know. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So anyways, the point is that it's an unusual situation for the Jets, but look, I mean, Sean Reynolds of Sportsnet was asking Rick Bowness about the idea of guys, you know, getting hurt basically because they're playing too much because of the schedule. And these guys don't want to, you know, they don't want to throw the NHL under the bus, but it is an unusual situation for the NHL to not be aware. Well, actually it isn't unusual. The NHL is often not aware. So
I guess they're aware, but they don't care.
At the end of the day, it's about this, Drew.
Let's get into it. The Betway game recap. It's brought to you by
Betway. It took us 25 minutes.
Yeah, I know. It's usually how we do it on this post-game show. One of the most trusted voices in sports betting, both in Canada and all around the world, Betway is the sports betting app that puts you, the customer, at the forefront. with a large selection of betting options and sports, as well as strong promotions and fair odds. What are you waiting for? Head on over to Betway and bet your way. Must be 19 years or older to play. Please play responsibly. It was a great start to the game for the Winnipeg Jets. Mark Scheifele, his 20th of the year, 8 consecutive years. Mark Scheifele has now scored 20 or more goals. Crazy numbers. We're old. Somehow Mark Scheifele's been around for that long. I was listening in the car to Kelly Moore on the CJOB broadcast. 8 times this year in 32 games, Mark Scheifele has opened the scoring. That's a wild stat, in my opinion, that a quarter of all the games the Jets have played, Mark Scheifele is responsible for the first goal. I heard that on the CJLB broadcast. Anyways, Mark Scheifele opens the scoring a minute 58 into the first period. Assist to Cole Perfetti and Carson Kuhlman. Kuhlman's first point as a member of the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah.
Newsflash to teams in the NHL. Don't leave Mark Scheifele behind your defenseman that wide open, because he's likely to do some damage. And he did here on a nice play by Perfetti to knock the puck forward to the uncovered Mark Scheifele.
Newsflash to me, don't pause, pardon the interruption, and then be behind the play. So I'm watching, all of a sudden on Twitter, I'm like, wait, a goal? What the heck is going on? There's no goal here. Game hasn't even started. So I'd get caught up, Drew. But much like Mark Scheifele, I mean, unlike me, Mark Scheifele got started on time, and the Jets did as well with that first goal. And that's his 250th goal in the NHL, second most in that 2011 draft class behind Nikita Kucherov. In first, I think he has 260 or something like that. So he's not that far off. Mark Scheifele, of course, has the most goals for the Jets 2.0. He's now 2 ahead of Blake Wheeler, who has 248. Blake Wheeler has 258 total. I think he's scored 10 with Atlanta. But Mark Scheifele just continues to do what, you know, is expected of him. We've come to just take for granted is produce. Although this year, unlike in years past, he is likely to eclipse 20 goals, likely to eclipse 30, likely to eclipse 40. He's flirting with 50, which is a big number for Mark Scheifele. And mm-hmm. You know, one of the articles that I read recently I posted in the morning papers was about the depth. I think it was a global. I don't know if Paulie Edmonds wrote it, or Kelly, but one of the guys wrote it on CGOB. And I think it was in yesterday's paper. It was talking about the depth of the centers and how the centers have all been producing. And Mark Scheifele, and you know, in years past, you would have like last year, for example, you had Scheifele would be going and Dubois would not be going, or then Dubois would be going and Scheifele wouldn't be going. This year, kind of, I said it was kind of like a dog sledding team. They're all pulling in the same direction. You got Scheifele, you got Dubois, and you've got Lowry. All three of those centers are producing, and even Adam Lowry, right? I mean, he's on pace to, you know, he's 1 point back of his total from last year, and I think he's flirting with 50 points this year, which would be obviously a career high for him. So the Jets center depth has been exceptional this year. And it's the reason why I think the record, in addition to Connor Hellebuck, of course, I think it's part of the reason why that their record is where it is. And yeah, Mark Scheifele, you know, opens the scoring and the team gets, you can see the Jets feel it because, you know, you come into this building, a team that hasn't lost once in regulation and you're feeling that pressure, right? The Jets know that the odds are against them, courtesy of our friends at Betway. The odds were significantly against the Winnipeg Jets coming into this game. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're feeling good. I mean, you know, regardless of the outcome of the last game, you know, because it wasn't necessarily the most clean game. But you're sitting there and you're thinking, okay, you're up against a team that nobody really thinks you can beat. It's a good test for you. And so the Jets get off to that good start, and that's what they needed to do. And I think that was the first time the Bruins have been scored on in some time. So to open a game. So good for the Jets to get that start, because that's exactly what they needed to kind of get feeling and get feeling good about their game.
Yeah. And they certainly felt good at that point. That's what you want to do when you're playing against a team like Boston, you know, on the road where it's a difficult place. You want to get that early lead. You want to take the crowd out of it. And then the Jets really took the crowd out of it, made it 2-0, 7:20 mark of the first period. In case anyone was concerned, fear not, Josh Morrissey got a point. It was on Jansen Harkin's third goal of the season. Morrissey with his 33rd assist, which is still hard to believe. Adam Lowry also gets an assist. It's a great play down low. It's Lowry, it's Harkins forechecking. It's mm-hmm. It's getting the puck below the goal line, working it back up to Morrissey. Morrissey with the shot from the point, and Jansen Harkins is causing trouble in front of Jeremy Swayman. He's, you know, being there and he's being big and he you know, the puck sort of glances off of him, but it glances off of him enough to get through Swayman and give the Jets a 2-0 lead. And that's how you're going to have to do it. It's going to have to be dirty. It's going to have to be greasy. And this is the definition of dirty and greasy to make it 2-0 for the Jets.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, that's exactly what we didn't see from the Jets later on in the game. Mm-hmm. And there was a Brendan Dillon, I think, in the third period, you know, unleashed a howitzer from the point. And it was a nice shot. It was a heavy shot. But there's only one problem. Swayman saw it. There was nobody in front. There were no bodies in front. Nobody took away his eyes. So it's a lot easier for the goaltender to make that save. I don't care how hard Brendan Dillon's shot is. If you don't have bodies in front, it's very difficult. And that's what the Jets had to do. They couldn't get highlight tonight. You needed to go for that greasy goal type of thing. And that's exactly what happens, right? The Morrissey shot goes after, off Jansen Harkins. Shout out to Jansen Harkins. I mean, today was his 150th game in the NHL.
That number already 150, really?
And yeah, it is. And you know, it's impressive because if folks will remember, he was the second rounder for the Jets in that remarkable 2015 draft, a draft probably never to be repeated by the Winnipeg Jets, you know, or most other teams, because that almost every guy made an impact in the NHL. Yeah. But you know, at the same time, you know, Harkins went down to the ECHL, right? We talk about it, went to the AHL, then went to the ECHL, came back up to the AHL. Worked his ass off, got to the NHL, went back to the AHL, and now is back in the went back to the AHL, now back in the NHL. So you can see it. You can see even, you know, the play actually that for me that showed Jansen Harkins' work ethic, which is when I talk, I mean, nobody has work ethic to me like he does, was when he beat out the icing in the second period. It's a routine play, but you know what? You can see that the compete level is high with him right now. And that line seems to be chugging along, and that was a nice play by Jansen Harkins. And look, he gets rewarded with his third goal of the season, just being in the right spot, which is in front of the net. And Josh Morrissey, 33 assists in 33 games. I mean, it's remarkable what he continues to do. I mean, 11 straight points, you know, with the with an assist, which I believe is the Thrashers Jets record. So, I mean, he just continues to fire, and all of a sudden the Jets are up 2-0, and you're thinking to yourself, is this going to be a blowout? The Bruins fans.
It was
two goals on four shots.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's two goals on four shots. So you're thinking to yourself, okay, does Swayman not have it? Are the Jets going to get lucky in the sense that, you know, he's not feeling it, because that's not a very good save percentage after four shots and two goals.
50%.
Exactly. I agree with Kenny's water bottle, by the way. Harkins does have Dave Minuk level of work ethic. And maybe that's why I find him to be a kindred spirit. But anyways, the point is
that why he was back in the minors?
Ouch. No, that's because he was just trying to talk. He wanted to talk to me more, Drew. He was like, I don't want to talk to all these NHL guys only. Dave's NHL and AHL, so I'll talk to him. Anyways,
exactly. 2-0 for the Jets after 20 minutes. I mean, Connor Hellebuck with a highlight reel save on David Pastrnak after an ugly interaction between Dylan Sandberg, and I'm really not 100% sure what was going on there. Obviously, a poor miscommunication. Don't let Pastrnak in on a breakaway from the red line. That's usually going to end poorly. It was maybe from the opposing blue line even. Don't let that happen typically, but Hellebuck was up to the challenge there, made it 2-0. After 20 minutes, and it was still 2-0. You know, later into the second period, when Pastrnak gets his 22nd of the year and assists to Nick Foligno and Grizzlechick, which I always mispronounce his name, so I'm just going to forgive me on that one for going forward. And this is the one that it's just a killer. I mean, it's just a bad bounce off the glass, off the boards. Hellebuck's out of the net, getting ready to try and knock it down, trying to knock down the rim in, and it just comes right back out front to Pastrnak, and Hellebuck does everything in his power to try and get back into the net. But I mean, David Pastrnak's not going to miss that, and it's just teed up on a platter for him. And again, you know, you'd say, you know, and I understand, like, you know, good teams get breaks like that, and they do. It just seems as though that's the case, that good teams always get the benefits of those bounces. And yeah, every arena isn't exactly uniform, but every baseball stadium isn't uniform either. And then there's sort of the unique charms of that can be home cooking and can work to your advantage when you know the bounces. I'm not saying that the Bruins did that on purpose or anything. It's just a bad bounce that goes against the Winnipeg Jets here. And it ends up in the back of the net. And all of a sudden, for a Bruins team that's been struggling to get anything past Connor Hellebuck, it's like manna from heaven to make it a 2-1 Jets lead rather than still 2-0 on what looked to be a routine play.
Yeah, and that's definitely a little bit of a backbreaker, because Connor Hellebuck looked legendary at that point. And mm-hmm. I think, he spent 2 years at UMass Lowell in North Boston. So I suspect he probably relished the idea of going, first of all, being, challenged by such a good Bruins team, but also, for having spent time there, the opportunity to play in TD Garden probably meant a lot to him after dealing with the illness that kept him out of the last game for the Winnipeg Jets.
Right.
But it seems to be, I don't know why, there's a bit of a debate here as to whether he should have left his net or not. But I mean, every goaltender leaves his net to retrieve that puck.
I remember back in the day, years ago, I was at a practice, and how rarely I go to practice. So I don't know.
Practice.
Maybe I didn't even have kids at this point in time. I probably didn't. That would be the only logical way that I was at a practice at that point. And we were in the Matt Frost Media Center. It was an afternoon practice. And there was an afternoon game on. It must have been a Sunday or something. I don't remember. And I remember watching, same thing, puck sort of rimmed around on the glass, bad bounce. I want to say Philly, I can't remember exactly, ended up in front of the net, or maybe even went off bad bounce in the net and the goalie was behind. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to Dennis Bayak about it. And Dennis is like, puck was up on the glass. Goalie should have stayed in the net. And, I think that used to sort of be the rule of thumb. Now, it's less so. Now it's, if the goalie can go and knock down the puck, the goalie goes and knocks down the puck. It's more of a judgment call for the goalie than it used to be, where if it's in the glass, stay in the net. So there's nothing like that. I mean, I'm not faulting Hellebuck.
Look,
I'm not
faulting
anybody. It's just an absolutely huge break for the Bruins.
Yeah. I mean, look, I remember that it happened to Eric Comrie once years ago. It was very weird. Like it was even more bizarre than today's, because it actually hit the stanchion and bounced into the net off of that bounce, because he went behind the net. So
we were talking about Darren Quint last week. Remember?
That's
there
true.
You go. Darren
that
Quint.
Is true.
Joaquin Gage is the poster boy for staying in net.
How weird was that, that we were talking about that? And then the next day.
It was very weird. There was the anniversary.
I know.
NHL. What's her name? Jen. NHL history.
No, that was it was Mike Comito.
Mike Comito, sorry, it was Mike Comito, right?
Yeah, he does NHL, this day in NHL history. So,
That's right.
Yeah, but anyways, it happens. And Connor Hellebuck to that point had been fantastic, and you don't blame him for that, because, again, I would imagine that's part of the Jets' plan. If the Jets' plan was it to keep Connor Hellebuck in the net, then he wouldn't have left the net. But they obviously have a game plan in order for them to take possession of that puck quickly and get it to him. And again, if that puck doesn't rim the way it did, he stops it and it's not an issue. Right. And so instead it's 2-1, and now the Bruins fans are just wild, because, it's one thing if you score a goal, greasy goal or a hardworking goal, but to get a fluke goal like that, that's a backbreaker, because at that point, you're thinking, are we going to be able to beat this guy? This guy's unbelievable. He's stopping everything. I mean, there was one play where Connor Hellebuck was literally on his ass, then turned around, had his back to the thing, still made the save. He kept making all the stops. So, I mean, the reality was for the Jets and for the Bruins, I think he was a bit in their heads. They're like, I don't think we're going to be able to beat this guy. So that's kind of one of those things that was definitely a little bit of a backbreaker, because it was such a fluke and it gave the Bruins so much more life.
That's exactly what it did. It gave him life and gave him confidence that they were going to get some more goals when they'd been struggling to do that at that point in time. And then we talked about a bit of a controversial penalty call, Mark Scheifele in the box for tripping. And Jake DeBrusk gets his 12th of the year, assist to Pastrnak and Lindholm. And it's an absolutely beautiful play by Pastrnak. He's such a fantastic hockey player to watch. I mean, I'd say there's maybe a dozen guys that are worth paying for to watch. He's one of them. The Bruins, Patrice Bergeron's probably worth, doing it as well, for all the subtleties in his game and all the genius in his game. And we can name the other ones. You know who they are. You know who the superstars in this league are. This is a beautiful play by Pastrnak setting up DeBrusk. And you can just see they know each other so well, and they've played together for so long, and they have such a high level of intelligence. The entire, core of that Bruins team has such a high level of intelligence and reliance and muscle memory as for where everyone's going to be. And DeBrusk makes no mistake sort of on the deflection. And at the 15 minute mark of the second period, it's a tie game at 2-2, Dave.
Yep. And that's when you just really felt that momentum mm-hmm. already starting to crumble, and for the or the reserve, I should say, for the Jets starting to crumble, and the Bruins started to build their momentum, and you could feel it chugging along. And whether you agree or disagree with a penalty, the reality is you have to kill off the opportunity. And the Jets, I mean, look, it's the number one power play for a reason, right? And the Jets did some good things, I thought, for the most part in the power play, but they ultimately fell short. And yeah, it's a 2-2 game. And again, the problem for the Winnipeg Jets was the momentum continued, right? And they were outshot. I mean, through the last two periods, it was significant. I think it was like, what, 27-9 or something like that. So, but even in that second period at one point, I think it was like 11-2 in favor of Boston. So, you know, you're back on your heels, and it was not, you know, you're expecting Connor Hellebuyck to be otherworldly, which he was to a certain degree. And for the record, just to clarify, I didn't think that when Connor Hellebuyck had his back to the net, that was a world-class save. I just thought it was just hilarious that he was just in such a zone that even when he doesn't even have his face to the oncoming puck, he was still making the stops. But regardless, the Jets just weren't able to stop the Boston Bruins from coming at them. And that's what the Boston Bruins did for the remainder of that second period and for the third period. And they kept coming at the Jets in waves, and they controlled possession and they controlled the puck. Yeah. And they, again, if it wasn't for Connor Hellebuyck, it would have been a much different game. I saw some of the Bruins media guys who we follow, of course, because we used to have them on the show back in the day.
Yeah, more regularly, you know, at least. Yeah,
more regularly. Their position was, they're like, wow, like if it wasn't for Connor Hellebuyck, this is probably a 5 or 6 goal game right now.
Well, because of the way,
and we've said that a lot. I mean, look, you're giving up 40 shots in a game. That's less than ideal. You know,
especially because it was, well, you know, what were the shots on goal after 10 minutes? I mean, after
13-10 for the
Jets. Yeah. So the Jets gave up, you know, 29 shots over the last 40 minutes of the
game.
And
only took what, 10?
And took 14 over the 14 in the last 40 minutes. It was one-sided, is what we're trying to say. And, you know, by any metric you want to look at, it was one-sided over the last 40 minutes of the game. 3-0 in terms of goals, shots, possession, face-offs. Boston Bruins are a damn good hockey team, folks, and the Jets were close, but it only counts as we said horseshoes. Earlier, horseshoes and hand grenades. Nick Foligno gets the game-winning goal, 11:08 mark of the third period. It's his sixth. Charlie Coyle and Frederick get the assist on it, and it's just a blown coverage by the Jets, and they've been pretty good at not blowing coverages this year, especially in the high danger zone. But this one was just a miscommunication between, I believe, Connor and Dubois, and if I'm wrong, don't kill me for it. I'm on some cold medicine tonight, so things might have been a little bit blurry, but it's a miscommunication, and it's a broken coverage, and Nick Foligno knows how to score. He's done for a lot of years in this league, and he fires a wrist shot past Connor Hellebuyck, giving the Bruins eventually the 3-2 victory as a result.
Yeah, and like we said, that's one of those mistakes you just can't really afford to make, is the fact that, you know, you leave a guy open in a high danger area, and there's only so many saves that Connor Hellebuyck can make. And, you know, it's 8:40 left to go in that third period. So it's really, you know, the teams that played tight, it was actually even though Boston had more shots, it felt like it was a pretty tight opening 10 minutes of that third. And you look, again, you have to reference the fact that it doesn't look good when the refs don't make obvious calls. You know, like to miss the Pierre-Luc Dubois high stick is pretty bad, because again, if it's happening away from the play, I don't care. If it happens away from the play, maybe a linesman's watching, it's not the big deal. But the reality is that you're going to tell me that four guys with the puck watching in front missed that. It's and I mean, again, you could think that he was exaggerating, trying to and then call him in for an embellishment. But like, every single person, I mean, we're watching, the camera's watching it. Everybody is watching it for a reason, because that's where the puck is, meaning that's what the refs are watching. And if the refs are watching it, you can't not call it a high sticking penalty. And again, Boston has a phenomenal penalty kill, so the Jets aren't necessarily going to score. But it's just an inconsistency in the game, that it's part of the reason why people want to hear from the refs. Not that the refs are going to give you an answer anyways, but like, I think the lack of accountability, it bothers people, because there really isn't any, there's no mechanism to discuss, like, wait a second, so you missed. I mean, the problem is it'd be torched, because everybody would be like, have a list of things that the refs missed. And it's easy to look, and don't get me wrong, what a hard job. It is a hard job. The game moves extraordinarily fast. But the reason why they added a fourth official was to get things right. So don't tell me you're going to add a fourth official to get make the right calls and then have stuff that just is and again, that's just one example. I mean, how many examples? You got guys, the fourth official tends to now just get in the way. And we how many times have we seen plays get screwed up because, you know, a linesman gets hit with a puck, the puck stays in the zone, or a ref is in the way and you can't clear. Like, there's is the benefit is it being outweighed by the negative effect? You know, because so far you don't really see that positive. At least I don't. So it's unfortunate. I'm not blaming the refs solely. I think, again, like I said, I think Boston was the better team ultimately. But and I thought Swayman played good, you know, good enough in the second and third periods to keep his team, you know, ahead. And so, or keep it in his team in it. And then, of course, to give his team retain the lead as he was able to do. And again, the Jets didn't have the requisite push they needed with the goaltender pulled with what I think was at a minute 42 left in that third period, Drew. So that's an unfortunate situation, but it is what it is. And there's a reason why, like I said, the Boston Bruins are 18-0-2 at home.
Yeah, they are a very impressive home team. The Jets dropping a 3-2 decision to the Bruins. No time to weep, though. The Jets wrap up the pre-Christmas portion of the schedule tomorrow in Washington against the Capitals, a rematch of where the Capitals went into Winnipeg a couple weeks ago and did some damage to the Winnipeg Jets. When we come back here on the Illegal Curve post-game show, we'll talk about tomorrow's game against the Capitals. We'll give away some prizes. Dave M. will do a Manuk Moose Minute after the Moose won last night in Iowa. Much more to come.
I forgot,
don't go anywhere. Just stay where you are. If you can watch Chris Streveler and the New York Jets on your second screen.
Make sure the screen
is locked to the Illegal Curve post-game show. We'll be right back. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, we're with you on a Thursday night.
Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the biggest acts and all the up-and-comers. They've all made their mark at Rumors Comedy Club, North America's longest-running independent comedy club. Rumors has kept Winnipeg laughing for over 25 years. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends or book your office or birthday party, even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
He winds up. Oh, looks like Ezzy took that one right in the choppers.
A blistering fast puck hurts like HE double hockey sticks. That's why I let the pros at Linden Market Dental Center turn my yow into
wow.
Get your brilliant smile back with state-of-the-art restorative and cosmetic dentistry from real pros.
And remember, always wear a mouth guard.
Now that's solid on ice advice. Learn more at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Creating smiles for life.
Whoa, Ezzy, everything okay? You look stressed.
Of course I'm stressed. We're moving, the house is upside down, the kids failed miserably at packing the fine china, and my life is in chaos. Chaos!
Yes, that does sound like a problem.
What am I going to do?
Ezzy, relax. Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage is the answer. With 60 years of experience in moving Manitobans and a track record of exemplary customer service, one call to Rollies and your stress is gone. No job is too big or too small. Just visit Rollies.com and they will take it from there.
Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Rollies Transfer Moving and Storage, online at Rollies.com.
Dave, my man, why are you in the car already? It's hours until game time.
Drew, it's because I'm stressed out right now, driving around downtown Winnipeg, looking for a parking spot, and I'm not finding one. I've lost Ginsburg. I don't even know where that guy is right now.
Dave, haven't I taught you anything? Do what I do. Pre-book your entire month's worth of game day parking with the Grid Park app. It's super easy to use and saves me both time and stress.
Well, Drew, I'm not independently wealthy like you are. So I'm sorry that I don't have millions of dollars to pre-book my parking month in advance. What's that going to cost you? $25?
How about $5?
Come on, $5? No yep. way.
$5. I'm not telling you a lie. And our listeners can get a free park with the new special promo code Illegal Curve. Guess what? There's more.
Come on, there's more, Drew. You're lying to me. What more could there be?
Grid Park now has underground parking, so my car can stay warm during the game.
So wait a second. All the driving around I do looking for parking, minus 40, you're telling me I could be toasty warm in a car after the hockey game?
That's exactly what I'm telling you. Underground parking. Just download the Grid Park app. That's G-R-Y-D Park. And use the code IllegalCurve. All one word. You'll park for free your first time.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
For three generations and over 80 years, Tough Duck has been making apparel that works and plays as hard as the people who wear it. From jackets to work boots and everything in between, Tough Duck's clothing can handle the harshest environments, even the Illegal Curve hockey show. Work to live, live to play. Visit toughduck.com.
9:35 in the evening. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve post-game show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk with you on this Thursday night. We'll be back again tomorrow night for the post-game show after the Jets and the Washington Capitals. Dave, how did the Jets bounce back? I mean, this is they had a 2-0 lead here. They probably thought that they were in a pretty good position, at least to earn 1 point. They end up getting none. Now they have to go to Washington, the second half of the back-to-back. You know, this is the sixth game in 8 nights. How do they find sort of an extra reserve tomorrow to be able to, compete and get a good result against a very improved Washington Capitals team from where they were earlier in the season?
Well, the good news for the Jets, the Capitals are playing right now. We're just played today, and so and that game went to overtime. So there's a benefit in that regard for the Winnipeg Jets is that it's not just one team that's going to be playing a back-to-back. It is going to be two teams, of course, having played a back-to-back. But, yeah, I mean, look, you know how you did against Washington in your building, and you want to have a measure of revenge. You want to have a good feeling. You really do want to have – I mean, you don't want to go into the break having lost 3 of 4. And as mentioned that on the show the other night, if you would have lost the game on Tuesday night against the Ottawa Senators, and you had two real tough games. Oh, is that you, Drew? Sorry. I'm getting you guys confused, but
okay.
But the point is that, that very easily could have been a 4-game losing streak. Well, right now you've lost 2 of 3 and you need to kind of even things out, because one of the things, we've written about or we've talked about is the fact that the Jets have banked a lot of points, right? So they're in the top upper echelon right now of the Western Conference, and that's a huge thing for them. Mm-hmm. But, and we talked about it. They've had Saku Mäntylainen and Nikolaj Ehlers on the trip. Now, Rick Bonus was asked about that this morning. Mm-hmm. And his update was essentially, they're on the ice, they're skating, but they're still weeks away. Now, and Dreger was on Insider Trading, I think, after the game on Tuesday, and said something like Ehlers is 2 weeks away. So
which is first week, which is the first week of January. So it's getting closer.
Yeah, it's getting closer. But that's massive, because January is going to, that's why if you're the Winnipeg Jets and you can just kind of stay even, Steven, it's huge. And that's kind of got to be your motivating factor. You've got to continue to play a little bit. I think you have to play a little bit tighter. Mm-hmm. And they did. And you can see what happens when you make one mistake. One mental mistake ends up with, a Nick Foligno goal in the back of the net, and it's a 3-2 game. In a game that you very easily could have at least forced to overtime and maybe won, because the Jets have been so good at 3-on-3. So, mm-hmm. I would put the Jets 3-on-3 against any team right now, obviously, with, 7-1 in overtime? Something so like that would have been a way to kind of motivate the Jets to do that. But now you'd say, okay, well, how do you do it against Washington? The question becomes, do they insert some fresh legs into this lineup? Dylan Sandberg, a couple of big pizzas tonight. He made a couple of big mistakes that ended up as pretty grade A chances against the Jets. Do the Jets sit him tomorrow and put in Kyle Capobianco? Do the Jets want to, put a, Michael Essiemont into the lineup to gain a little bit of pizzazz, a little tenacity? Maybe they do.
And fresh legs, very important.
It's kind of like the idea of when you had a taxi squad, you may as well avail yourself of the opportunity that's present with these guys being there. So to me, that it's definitely something that you have to consider, because, it might be useful to get a little bit of an injection of some freshness into this team, because they are, as we've detailed, they've played a lot of hockey. I know Essamont has been played in five straight games. And so maybe you get him into the contest. Maybe you get, you know, someone, I don't know who you sit in his place, because you're not sending anybody from the third line. So you maybe switch the, you know, maybe you don't, but I mean, Axel Johnsson Fjällby is going to look for revenge against his former club. So maybe you don't sit him either. And you don't want to break up that all Swedish line, which Kevin Stenlund was asked about today, you know, if they had a name or nickname or whatever it was. But look, it is what it is. I just think the Jets need to find something, and we'll see, obviously, whether they're going to go with David Rittich or Connor Hellebuyck in that, because it was a heavy amount of shots for Connor Hellebuyck tonight. And obviously he's had a rest for a number of games. Now, what is he? When was his last game? Was it a week ago?
His last game before tonight was Saturday in Vancouver.
Right. So, yeah, it'll be almost a week, right? So, I mean,
He played tonight, but, you know.
He had
4 days off in the middle, which is unusual for him.
Right. So, anyways, I'm just saying that you could, in theory, you know, run him out tomorrow. But, I mean, Rittich made a number of saves, and you know, the Jets won his last one. So, Washington's going to be a tough test. And I just think that, I think both teams are going to be fairly even in terms of, like, their legs. Because of the fact, I mean, you could say the Jets might be a little bit more burnt out. I haven't obviously analyzed the Capitals schedule, Drew, the way we've looked at the Jets schedule, but ultimately I think it'll be a good test to see the Jets, if they can kind of, you know, pull out the last sort of, you know, leave it all out there, the last sort of gasp out of the tank, and see if they can just get enough to kind of really just build something tomorrow in Washington and hold on for a big win.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be a key game for the Jets tomorrow in the U.S. nation's capital, post-game right around 8:45 p.m. tomorrow from the Jets and the Capitals. Dave and Ezzy will be there for sure. I'm a question mark depending on how my travel goes tomorrow, as I'm heading down to the Southern Bureau of Illegal Curve, Mid-South, let's say, rather than the Deep South. So the Mid-South of the Illegal Curve Bureau, down to do some shows from down there over the holiday season. Let's get some contests, Dave. We have the Illegal Curve merchandise contest. We do it after each and every game. The unique code word, if you don't know how to enter, listen to me very closely. In the show description of the YouTube channel, there's a link to the contest page. Click that link. You'll see a whole bunch of things you can do to gain entries. Click one of them. One of them says unique code word. Enter the following unique code word there. You get 10 bonus entries. If you can't find it on the YouTube page, go to our website, illegalcurve.com. You'll see the contest link in most any article there. Click that. Same page will open. You'll see all the different things you can do to earn entries into the Illegal Curve merchandise contest, where we give away Winnipeg Jets gear after each and every broadcast here on the Illegal Curve post game show, which of course is brought to you by Betway. Dave M, the unique code for the Illegal Curve contest tonight. Anybody guessed it yet?
Five
people have guessed.
I blame Turd, because Turd kind of gave everybody the clue, aka actually gave everybody the word. So I went easy, because sometimes it's, you go with the obvious.
The holiday season, you sometimes want to throw the crowd a bone, although they really don't get anything extra. They just get
they get bonus points.
Well, I'm saying
early
they don't get bonus points. Yes, they get early bonus points, which doesn't actually translate to anything else, anything different.
No, but anyways, the point is that you know, I mean, I went with the obvious one. Cheers. Which actually, if I show you a picture on my phone, it'll be a picture of Ezzy with Norm from Cheers. Well, it wasn't really Norm. It was a cutout of Norm. If I post that, but the problem is, if I go too far, it'll be various pictures of Ezzy that probably are not appropriate to show. Because if anybody stayed in a hotel room with Ezzy, the guy is just an animal. I mean, it's all over the place with that guy. So I don't recommend it to anybody. I feel bad for his fam, but regardless, he's a big dumb animal, folks. We love him. Anyways, the point is, I went with Cheers because, you know, it's that's where everybody knows my name. I actually was going to go, for the record, with where everybody knows my name.
Yeah.
But the problem was, it was too long. Only allowed max of 20. So cheers it is.
Cheers
to everybody in the chat. And cheers is the unique code word. Enter that. Get 10 bonus entries in the Illegal Curve contest. And guys and girls, remember, we're getting close to the grand prize winner, the NHL game of your choice next month.
Yeah.
So we'll do that I don't know when we'll do that, Drew. I'm trying to think of what's the schedule look like.
Well, New Year's Eve they play in Edmonton, and then I think they have New Year's Day off, and then do they play on the 2nd? I think again. So we'll have to.
I'm looking right now at the schedule. Yeah, they do. Yeah. They play on the 3rd against Calgary. Okay. That's a home game. They play on the 31st against the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah,
that'll be a lot of hockey for me. I'll be at the Moose game at 4 o'clock. And I'm 2 tickets to give away for that Moose game for folks to be aware of.
Good.
And only 1 point. Should be 10 points, Darwin. I hope I wrote this. I hope it's 10. Oh, it's only worth 1. Oh, I'm sorry, folks. Maybe I'll try and amend that. Actually, the people who guessed early, you guys just got burnt because I'm going to switch it now to make it worth 10.
Anyways,
although I suspect if I update it, what'll end up happening is you'll either be able to re-enter or you might get screwed, which kind of is funny, actually. Sorry. I feel bad because Bailey, the intern, she also put in the early one. So I don't feel bad for Frosty or Alan or Turd, but Bailey, I feel bad about. Sorry,
that's
Bailey.
Kind of you. So let's give away some merchandise.
Yes.
Who's the winner of the contest?
The winner of the contest is, drumroll please, Todd Peters. Oh, you just hit it. Todd Peters.
All right. There you go.
Oh, there we go. Todd Peters. So Todd entered. I don't remember what Todd's winning choice was. I could find out, actually, but... Todd, I always laugh. Well, Todd won because,
yes.
You know how Todd won, folks?
Visited
a legal curve. Not saying that that's
simple,
the reason why.
Forward.
But if you visited a legal curve, that's how Todd won. So,
visited illegalcurve.com, not visited like all of us in person, as much
yes.
as we'd love
yes.
to get together with all of you. Illegalcurve.com.
But more importantly, I think also that I was actually going to amend and say, actually, no, wink, wink. Todd actually won because he left a glowing review about Illegal Curve on our podcast. And as a result, that's how he won.
It works. Whatever it is, congratulations to Todd Peters, the winner of the Illegal Curve merchandise contest. We'll be in touch with Todd.
Apparently, Todd cannot be here, but Frosty's prepared to accept it on his behalf. Just to give a little update, because people are wondering where their merch is.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit behind. I'm under the weather, unfortunately. So I'm trying to get everything under control here at the Illegal Curve headquarters. Mm-hmm. But don't you worry. They may not be Christmas gifts, but they might be post-Christmas, pre-New Year's. There's a week of time where Dave M will be driving around the city, maybe to places like Lockport, maybe other spots, parts unknown. I will be delivering some merch all next week. So I will, I'll just get the icy wagon. I'd love to get Ezzy. I don't think he'll be available, but so Spencer, if you want to wait for one more week, you might have to wait if you want to have Ezzy come with me. And then
Ezzy's
I can just
out of town, Dave.
So I said, if he wants to wait one more week from next week,
on top of that,
come on, pay attention. Okay. Let's go. Tut, tut.
Tut, tut. Sorry. Yes. Okay. Indeed. Yeah. So Dave M is going to, he's working overtime. Dave M and his elves in the workshop are getting that merchandise ready for everybody. So hang tight. We appreciate everyone's patience as we get all eyes out to our friends. Dave M, the Moose yes. played last night, which means it's time for.
Put on your antlers. It's time for the Minook Moose Minute on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Ah, the Manitoba Moose. Yes, that team that is the AHL club of Winnipeg. They were in Iowa in the path of like the blizzard of a century that's supposed to be hitting Toronto. They've got a blizzard coming in Iowa. I don't know if you saw that weather, the sports reporter
who was
doing weather.
Yeah.
Very funny. So he was hilarious how bitter he was. That was hilarious, though, I thought. Anyways, the Moose, they got Arvid Holm back, but he wasn't in the lineup for the Manitoba Moose. He was returned after the emergency recall was over, obviously with Connor Hellebuck getting healthy and ready to go. So they had Oskari Salminen in net with Evan Cormier up from Kalamazoo backing him up. And 0-0 game after 20 minutes, pretty tight, 9-8, I think, were shots in favor of the home team. And then the second period, the Moose started to get rolling. Alternate captain, Cole Meyer, he's been really good since he returned from injury. He scored, I believe, his fifth goal of the season to make it 1-0, and then followed that up with a second goal to make it 2-0 for the Manitoba Moose. His sixth goal, of course, if you can do proper math. The Wild were able to strike back towards the end of that second period to make it a 2-1 game. And then the Moose started to chug. Who else? But the lunch pail line continued to contribute. Evan Poli, 58 seconds into the third period. So that made it a 3-1 lead for the Moose. And then Dominic Toninato, he scored on the power play to make it 4-1. And then adding a little insurance, Jeff Malott with his team leading 14th of the year to make it a 5-2 game. And then the Wild would add a goal with 3 minutes to go. But the Moose would hang on and win 5-3. Drew in Iowa. So they are now winners of three straight games, five of their last six. And they improved to 15-7, 2-1 on the season. So the Moose are feeling good about themselves. And, you know, it's a good thing because they've got they've been dealing with some injuries, obviously, and some recalls. And they've lost Chaz Lucius and Brad Lambert, of course, to the World Juniors. There was actually a good article today about all the Jets prospects, well, all the Canadian team's prospects who are playing in the World Juniors. And, of course, Rutger McGroarty, the 2022 first rounder, as well as Fabian Wagner, the 2022 sixth rounder. So for Jets prospects who are out in Eastern Canada playing in the World Juniors, getting started on Boxing Day. But anyways, it was a good game for the Moose, and they will conclude their pre-Christmas portion of the schedule tomorrow night in Iowa in a rematch. So that should be a good one. That, I think, starts at 7 o'clock. Hold on, let me just make sure. Check that out right now. 7 o'clock. So the Jets game starts at 6. Moose game starts at 7, which means because, of course, tomorrow, because we have no Saturday show.
Yeah.
Don't you worry, folks. I'll convince Drew and as, oh, wait, what am I talking about? I'm hosting tomorrow.
You're hosting tomorrow. I might not be, it's questionable if I'm going to be here or not.
That's amazing. I didn't even think about it. I'm going to be doing a live Moose thing. Ezzy's going to be like, Dave, I got to go. I'm flying. I'm like, no, just get off. We'll just do a one-man show. The Dave Manuk Experience, talking about the Manitoba Moose. I'll have a little fun with it.
Something to look forward to for tomorrow night's post-game show after the Winnipeg Jets and the Washington Capitals. We look forward to that. I want to say personally, if I'm not here tomorrow, and it's, again, up in the air, I'm hoping to be, but time will tell and travel will tell on that factor. If I'm not, I want to wish everybody in the chat, everybody watching, everybody listening, and all the best. Merry Christmas, whatever you're celebrating this time of year. Even if you're not celebrating anything specific and you're spending time with family, I hope you have a great time with it, and you get some, you know, that QT, and maybe you sort of take a step back from the hustle and the bustle of everything that goes on in the world, and you just get a little bit of time with your loved ones, because it's important to do that. So if I'm not here tomorrow, I want to extend that to everybody else, and Dave M and Ezzy will say their own piece tomorrow without me in that case. But I just wanted to say that love your loved ones a little bit more this year than you did last year, just because, you know, they're there and you never know when they won't be there anymore. So spend some quality time with them, and I hope you have some good time with them wherever you may be and whatever you're doing to celebrate. That's it for the Illegal Curve post-game show on this Thursday night. Want to say a big thank you to all the sponsors who make the post-game show, the Saturday show, and the website a possibility. Our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Betway, they're the title sponsor of this here post-game show, Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rollies Transfer, Grid Park, and The Keg. Support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey. Thanks to Frosty Winnipeg for putting it up on the screen, as he usually does. Dave M is right over there. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If you haven't already done so, smash the like button, subscribe to the podcast, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Tell your friends, tell your family the best place to be after each and every Winnipeg Jets game is the Illegal Curve YouTube channel. And of course, again, on Saturday mornings. For Dave Manuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until tomorrow night at around 8:45 p.m., we wish you good night and good luck. And thanks for watching the Illegal Curve postgame show.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel. Follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.